Newcastle Herald, Newcastle, Pennsylvania, Friday, July 2nd, 1920. Walter Johnson holds Red Sox hitless. Walter Johnson, the speed king of the Washington American League team, achieved one of his ambitions yesterday when he pitched a no-hit, no-run game against the Boston Red Sox. In all his 14 years of big league baseball, during the greater part of which he has ranked as the greatest pitcher of the game, he has failed to turn in this wonderful accomplishment. Many fans have believed that Walter has been slipping greatly this year, and in fact, he has been pitching rather erratic ball, being hammered off the mound twice. But it was predicted that he would get going strong when the weather warmed up, and Walter lived up to the prediction yesterday.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to This Week in 1920s Baseball. This is your co-host, Podsman Josh, a.k.a. Bucketfoot. I got my man Sweetbread on the line. How you doing, Sweetbread?
I'm doing well, Bucketfoot. How's everything?
Can't complain, man. We just did our fun 1920s baseball game show, Hall or Nothing, which was a lot of fun. And now we're getting back in. Now we're getting back into the regular format, even though we're jumping around in the calendar a little bit. Yeah. As you heard in our opening section here, Sweetbread shared with us the story of July 1, when Walter Johnson, the great Walter Johnson, pitched a no-hitter for the Senators against the Red Sox. So here we are recording at the beginning of August, but we missed covering this game last month, and we wanted to just bring it to your attention because it was the only no-hitter of Walter Johnson's career. It was the only no-hitter thrown in the 1920 season, and it was obviously a remarkable performance by a remarkable pitcher. Assuming our listeners know a little bit about the great Walter Johnson, but I'm sure there's things you don't know, and he is just such a titan of the game that we wanted to highlight this performance of his, and we wanted to talk a little bit about his greatness. So, Sweetbread, how great was Walter Johnson?
I mean, I think he was one of the first five elected to the Hall of Fame, were Christy Mathewson, Walter Johnson, Ty Cobb, Babe Ruth, and Honus Wagner. They're kind of like the Mount Rushmore of the Hall of Fame and of maybe of Major League history in some ways, just because of that, you know, that first enshrining. And I think it was 1936. So obviously, you know, those of you that may have know baseball history are probably very familiar with Walter Johnson. Those of you who may not have studied the earlier era may not know him as much, but he was as dominant of a pitcher as ever played the game. His stats are unbelievable. He has over 400 wins, second all time, 110 shutouts, which is an unbelievable, unbeatable record. One of the great records maybe in Major League history, 2.17 ERA, and he played on a horrible team throughout his career.
How about this number that jumped out at me? Well, let me just tell you this number. I saw that he had 110 career shutouts. I mean, I'm sorry. You already said that. He had 531 complete games. That's the number I wanted to say. 531 complete games. That is a different sport altogether that we're talking about, where that could be done in a man's career. That is crazy. 20 years he pitched, all of them with the Senators, and he threw 531 complete games. I mean, of all the numbers, that is one that definitely stands out.
Yeah, what I mean, some of the elite pitchers today, like with Max Scherzer, he tends to throw a lot of complete games, right? But I mean, what does he throw, like five or six in a year? I don't know what the leaders are today, but
single digits
probably. You know, and then you know he pitched 21 years, so that's about 25 complete games a year. So probably triple the leaders on average per year. Leaders from today. So interesting. He's second of six children. He grew up kind of in the boonies in the Midwest. He was physically imposing. He had these really long arms. He didn't throw like terribly fast by today's standards. I know today, like we have a lot of guys now throwing in the high 90s pretty consistently, but there's a lot of factors why that might not have been the case. Obviously we've talked a lot about the ball condition, you know, so the balls were probably a lot heavier. His windup and delivery was a little bit unorthodox. He kind of threw from the side. So he was like a semi-sidearm. pitcher, so he was devastating to right-handed hitters. And of course, there's a whole anecdote with that about Ty Cobb, how Ty Cobb would crowd the box, and Walter Johnson, being the gentle giant that he was, would be so scared of hitting batters that he would, you know, he would pitch him outside, and he actually hit Johnson pretty well. So anyway, that
was Cobb a lefty?
I thought Cobb was righty. Maybe you're right. Yeah,
maybe that's why he was. He really messed with him because he was opposite hand and he was leaning out across the plate.
Yeah, you're right. He batted left. My mistake. Okay, so,
I thought so.
Yeah.
But that could explain why Cobb was able to handle Johnson well. Yeah, I looked it up. The league leader in complete games last year through three.
Okay, so that's when we said like eight, yeah, that was way off.
That's crazy.
So he pitched 21 years and he had 110 shutouts. So that's what, like a little over five a year, five shutouts.
Yeah.
So he had more shutouts per year on average than players today have complete games.
I mean, twice as many almost as the best player would have. That's unbelievable. We did note, I think earlier in the year when we were doing our All-Star picks, that Johnson actually did not have a good 1920. He had some odd kind of injuries this year.
I think looking up his stats, this is his worst year. Now, he came up when he was a rookie in August in 1907, so he didn't have a full year. But, you know, he went 5-9 with a 188 ERA. I don't know how that's possible.
He threw two shutouts that year and had 11 complete games. He came in the last month of the year.
So, you know, he had a great rookie campaign. He continued that all the way through the 19 teens. I think you mentioned that he won a Chalmers Award, the MVP award. He would go on to win the 1924 MVP, which was very rare for pitchers, you know, before they created the Cy Young Award. I think that was created like in the 50s.
We know that wins aren't everything, but he won 20 or more games in 1910, 1911, 1912, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. So he won 20 or more. He won 36 that one year. 1913, he was 36-7 with an ERA of 1.14. That has to be one of the greatest all-time pitching seasons. 29 complete games, 11 shutouts, 346 innings pitched, 243 strikeouts. That was a season. But yeah, here in 1920, he had an arm injury, which you would expect. He had a leg injury, which was a little weird. And it said he just had a bad cold. Like, he had some sort of sick, like, viral thing that just knocked him on his butt. So he was out for a bunch of the 1920 year. And it is really odd to see a losing record in his stat page. There were not very many years in his career. I mean, there was maybe three where he had more losses than wins. And his ERA was 3.13. I mean, it's not like it was terrible. Yeah. But the year before that, it was 1.49. So he was like, you know, his ERA was double what it was the previous year. He was really down in 1920. He did come back to pitch well the next couple of years. 1924, yeah, like you said, that's when he won another MVP award, 23-7 with a league-leading ERA of 2.72 and led the league in starts and in shutouts and in strikeouts. So He definitely came back from this, but 1920 was his definitely down year, but cool to see him making news for his no-hitter. He almost pitched a perfect game, right? The only batter that reached was on an error on a play that should have been made, which is, you know, if you think about it, it's really not fair that the pitcher gets sort of, that somehow a perfect game is more impressive than a no-hitter.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that he didn't walk anybody. They called it, in that one article I read, a no-hit, no-walk performance. But they did not have the term perfect game. Do you know the year? You're never going to guess this. Do you know what year perfect game was officially adopted by Major League Baseball as a stat?
I don't know. 1976.
1991.
Wow.
That's really surprising. They did not use the term. I mean, it was used before then, but it wasn't it wasn't a Major League stat until 91. But yeah, it wasn't even used until many years later. So it's still a perfect game is really a team award in a way. I mean, but obviously the pitcher has to be impressive, but Walter Johnson certainly was that. And it's cool that we get to see a game here where he really brought his big train stuff. Good nickname too. Good NAR, big train.
Oh, big train. Great nickname. Yeah. And like you said, I mean, he wasn't having a terrible year overall, but kind of cut short. I think he was going to pitch two games after that no-hitter and then he gets shut down. He actually started off the year pretty well. at least, you know, he started off not so well against Boston, but then came back through a shutout, actually won the next two games, both complete games, a shutout and a one-run game. But, yeah, I mean, there's just so many anecdotes about him that I wanted to share with listeners. You know, and again, we could go on and on and on, but I'll just share a few. The first one that really struck me was Ty Cobb was quoted, and I don't know how accurate this quote is, but on August 2nd, 1907, this is Ty Cobb speaking, "I encountered the most threatening sight I'd ever seen in a ball field. He was a rookie, and we licked our lips as we warmed up for the first game of a doubleheader, and one of the Tigers imitated a cow mooing, 'Get your pitch ready.
Why?
Your hayseed's on his way back to the barn.'" Now, Joe was the
Joe
Cantillon of the Nats, was the manager. And the first time Cobb faced him, he said, "I watched him take this easy windup, and then something went past me that made me flinch. The thing just hissed with danger. We couldn't touch him. Everyone knew we'd met the most powerful arm ever turned loose in a ballpark." So that was Johnson's, I think, debut in 1907, or maybe at least the first time he faced Cobb.
That's cool.
Yeah, so to go along with the fact that he pitched for a losing team most of his career, he lost 26 games. And I think we may have mentioned something like this earlier this year, but he lost 26 games 1-0. Which is an unbelievable stat.
That is an unbelievable stat.
He's won the most games 1-0, and I didn't put down the exact number, but I think it's in the 30s, like 35, and he's lost the most games 1-0. Both of those are major league records. He had a 55-game scoreless inning streak, I think in like 1912. That's the American League record. And, you know, he had the reputation, like I said, of being this gentle giant. He had kind of a tragic life. His wife died in 1930. This is after he had retired, but he was managing at the time. Apparently of like heat exhaustion. I don't know what that would correlate with today. She got off like a train ride or something, like a long train ride. She died of heat exhaustion in 1930. And then Johnson himself, unfortunately, passed away at a pretty young age at 59, 1946, of a brain aneurysm.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's Walter Johnson. We could, you know, keep talking about him over and over again. The article that I found to go along with his arm trouble, it's from the New York Times on August 7th. It's talking about Walter Johnson. Obviously, he's out at the time. This is big news because, you know, he's probably regarded still as the greatest pitcher in baseball. Or one of the greatest, you know, and it's talking about he's returned to Washington after taking special treatment for a sore arm at the hands of Harry Knight, a local man. This is local to Rochester, New York, a local man who specializes in fixing up athletes.
Wow, that's interesting.
So, you know, I don't know who this Harry Knight was. I don't know back then. I guess they just, you know, they didn't have personal trainers. So who knows what kind of quack medicine he was applying. I apologize to family of Harry Knight, but you know, and they're expecting him to be home on August 14th.
But it kind of worked though. I mean, he came back, yeah. Right?
He didn't come back that year. He came back. He didn't come back till 1921. So I don't know. Yeah.
But I mean, some guys, their arm went dead and that was the end of their career. They had a,
the term dead arm? Like, what is that? I mean, you know, that's kind of faux pas in baseball, but I remember hearing that, you know, growing up a lot, you know, the idea of a dead arm.
Yeah. Like sometimes it's just fatigue, but sometimes it's that tendon tear that the Tommy John surgery can repair, I think. And that's why obviously some guys back then, you know, if they tore something like that, their career was over. So yeah, Johnson was able to come back. He did. I was looking at his Sabre page. He did get one World Series ring. The Senators were good in 1924. Yep. So they actually made it to the series in 25 too, but they lost. But he did get one. He got a ring in 24, so good for him.
Was one and only. And I think I forgot to mention he did win the pitching triple crown, which is wins, earned run average, and strikeouts, I think three times. So
nice.
Well, that's all I had for Walter Johnson. You want to do the standings? That will kind of lead into your topic because it'll kind of point at where we're headed.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll start with the American League. And surprise, surprise, our Cleveland Indians are still leading the standings, 67-34. They've built up a 4.5-game lead over the Yankees. I think that's a pretty similar lead since last time, 65.
I think that's bigger. Well,
a little bit bigger.
They had played each other and they had split the series.
Yeah, these three teams at the top of the American League, they've all have better records. So the White Sox are 63-40, the defending champion or defending, you know, pennant winner White Sox, mm-hmm. they're 3-40, is 5 out. So, you know, these three teams are all going to have better records than anybody in the NL. So then there's the huge drop off, the Browns. Who are 48-51 with, you know, they have great hitting, terrible pitching. You know, they have Sisler and who's our other board? Baby Doll, right? Baby Doll Jacobson.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Senators, 46-50, 18.5 out. 44-54 are the Red Sox, 21.5. The Tigers and then the Athletics are both having a terrible seasons. I forgot to look up, but I had read something that the Athletics had like an 18-game streak in the middle of the season. I don't know if it was more than that.
Wow.
Yeah, so the Athletics were just abysmal this year. So 38.
We'll have to look up the Bingles and Bungles article from the losing streak. I bet that guy had some things to say about those Bungles.
Lots of Bungles from the Athletics. So they're in the basement at 31-71, 36.5 out.
Wow.
So the Robins, the Dodgers, of course, our favorite Brooklyn team. 58-44. They're kind of still surprisingly keeping up ahead of the defending World Series champions, the Reds, who are a game and a half out at 53-42. And here's the team that the surprising upstart team, considering how bad they started off the year, the New York Giants, you know, with all that talent and obviously, you know, the rival, the Yankees are kind of taking their thunder this year, maybe for the first time. They're at 51-45, just 4 out. Tied with Pittsburgh, who we may or may not have cursed earlier this year, if our remember our Pittsburgh episode. They're doing okay, 51-45, tied with the Giants at 4 out. Cubs, 51-52, 7.5. The Cardinals, 45-54, 11.5, much more even league. And then we have the Braves at 41-50, 11.5 out as well. And then, of course, another Philly team, Phillies, 39-57, 16 out. So there are your standings on August 5th, 1920.
So the Robins are still in first place in the NL, huh?
Yep, they're still hanging tough.
But it's heating up a little bit. And what prompted me to look at the Giants a little more was the fact that I did my all-star picks for the National League, and I had three starters from the Giants, even though we knew that they had a losing record, but they had three starters. And I didn't even include High Pockets Kelly on the roster because he was probably the second best first baseman in the league behind the great Jake Daubert. So
you know,
they had
our NAR team, so that, you know, that's all that
matters. Yeah, High Pockets Kelly, Dave Bancroft, Frankie Frisch, Ross Youngs. Those are four all-star quality guys. So I started looking into it. Okay, before I get into that, let me tell you some of the reserve players on the Giants, because I know you'll enjoy the names. They got a guy we mentioned before, Jigger Stats.
Mm-hmm.
They got Rory Grimes, which is a really good 1920s name. They got this guy named Pug Griffin. He only played 5 games, but his name was Pug, so he's noteworthy. They had Spittin' Phil Douglas. Good NAR for Spittin' Phil. They had a pitcher named Virgil Barnes, a pitcher named Slim Sally, which is a pretty good name, a pitcher named Pol Parrott, P-O-L is his first name, Pol Parrott, and they had a pitcher named
him. Yeah,
I know he only had 4 plate appearances the whole year. He might have been a late year call up. I'm looking at the end of year totals for the 1920 Giants. They had another guy who just had 1 plate appearance named Tom Grubbs. So that's another good name. So we got Pug Griffin, Tom Grubbs, Pol Parrott, Slim Sally. Oh, I didn't even mention Rosie Ryan. That's a pretty good name. Rosie Ryan.
Rosie Ryan.
Yeah. And so, but the guys who were really good were Bancroft and Frisch and Youngs and High Pockets Kelly. So I was like, well, how are they so bad with all of these good players? And so they really had just a tale of two seasons. So jumping ahead here to the end of the year, I'll tell you, their second half, they were 50-27. So the first half of the year, they were 36-41. The second half, 50-27. Talk about a big jump. They were 5 games under 500, and then they were 23 games over. So they started – okay, so they ended their July here. They're just starting to get hot. They won 5 out of 6 to end July. And then they win 6 in a row to start August. So they go 10-1 to start August. So if you go from just these endpoints of their hot streak, they went 21-3 for a period of time from the end of July into the beginning of August. 21 wins and 3 losses. So the Giants got really hot. They did have a tie in August, which I don't know exactly how that happened, but they finished the month 20-11-1. So we'll have to look that up to see why. They did have good pitching. They had 3 pitchers with 20 wins. Phil Douglas, Spittin' Phil, had an ERA of 2.7. I think that really the key to their victory, though, was their hitting. Ross Young's got really hot. He hit 350 with an on-base percentage of 426 by the end of the year. He was hitting an even 300 at the end of June, but then he got that all the way up to 350 by the end of the year. High Pockets Kelly actually was a little better in the first half, but Young's on the with the stick and the pitchers all getting hot at once really helped the Giants come around to a really, really impressive stretch. I don't think anyone was better at any stretch in a 25-game stretch than their 21-3 that they had there. So, yeah, we've been kind of like pointing out every time we record how bad the Giants are, but they turn it around with a pretty amazing second half. So, yeah, just wanted to do a little mini bit of highlighting the Giants and talk about how they really start to turn things around here in the second half. And they have a really good NAR.
They're gnarly, that team.
I want to ask you if you think this is a little bit of a controversy. Got to get into it. There's been some feedback from the listeners that Urban Shocker should not be in the running for the highest NAR because – well, because that's not his nickname. Urban is his given name. So does a nickname have to be a nickname that someone else gives you? If you're just given a really cool name, isn't that part of the NAR formulation? Discuss.
Okay, so this happened to with another listener of ours, and because I was talking about NAR, and he said, oh, well, Luke Appling's got to be like number one. And I'm like, Luke Appling, that's like an average name. And he's like, no, his nickname was Old Aches and Pains.
That is a good name.
And then I started to think about it, and I was like, yeah, we haven't really made that distinction between nickname above replacement and just name above replacement. Because I think it's in one hand, we're doing nicknames, but on the other hand, we're just doing general names, right? Because a lot of these guys are just, we're just reading their names off of the box scores and saying, that's pretty amazing.
Right, and no one, I really doubt that people would call Appling Old Aches and Pains. Like, when he walked up.
Yeah.
Hey, like, whereas Babe Ruth is Babe. Like, that was, like, his name.
So in my mind, I thought about it a little bit. In my mind, maybe we should just call it name above replacement.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's tough, though, because we do want to include those nicknames. But if High Pockets Kelly, if that's his name... You know, that's his name. Like, that's just, and it's, but it's a nickname. I don't know. Maybe we need to discuss this and get a turn. But yeah.
Well, as we sort out the math for the NAR calculation, maybe a sort of multiplier can be given if the nickname is so prevalent that it is their name on their reference page.
Okay.
So yeah. some sort of like, say, multiply it by 1.05 or something, whatever their final score is, or 1.1 to give them to give it a boost. Okay.
Based I like on that. We'll discuss with our statisticians that are working hard behind the scenes for us.
Maybe that would be like a stickiness multiplier. Yeah. Like how sticky the name is. Like if Old Aches and Pains is good, but I don't think it's sticky. Like you're not looking at his player page and it doesn't say it on there. Whereas High Pockets, that's on his player page. That's a sticky name. That's all he's known as. Urban Shocker, though. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out if, like, it's just having an awesome given name is a boost or a detraction. Or if we just, we need to just rename the stat because it's not a nickname. It was just his name.
Just name. Urban above
his parents just named him Urban Shocker. I mean, that's weird.
Yeah, and where would we draw the line between including somebody's nickname like Raja, you know, versus just their name on a box score? And what determines that? Do we just go straight to the baseball encyclopedia? I don't know.
These are the important issues that we're grappling with. So we will continue to grapple.
And I have one more tidbit that I forgot about Walter Johnson that's very important.
Let's hear it.
You're going to enjoy this. In 1925, he hit, which I believe is a record for a pitcher in the entire season. Now, this is about 100 at-bats. He hit
433. What? He hit 400 as a pitcher?
Yeah.
I had no idea Walter Johnson could hit.
So he's a lifetime pretty, like, 270 hitter or something, which is pretty good for a pitcher, I think.
Yeah, even at that time.
For sure. But I thought that was wild. Yeah.
If you hear me, if you hear my keyboard, it's because I'm typing in Walter
Johnson. Okay, 235 lifetime hitter. But 433. And that he didn't have, like, a shortened season. That's 107 plate appearances, 42 hits. It's unbelievable.
Let's see what his best year in dingers. Well, he had 2 homers 1 year. That was his highest. Nice. 1 year he had 8 RBIs, 1 home run, and 1 stolen base. 1 year he had 2 stolen bases and 18 RBIs. That was he hit through 267. Which year did he hit 430? Oh, wow. That was like late in his career.
Yeah, he developed into a hitter late in his career, it looks like.
Maybe he was planning on transitioning to a different – because he hit 348 in his final year of his career. Way to go. Yeah. Way to sling stick big train. So all right.
I'm starting that in late, but it just needed to happen. So
his hitting page is actually pretty interesting to look at. Walter Johnson, the big train. The New York Giants making the comeback, and the pennant race heating up, or it's already been heating up, but in the American League, getting very exciting. Yeah. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining me here, Sweet Brett, as always.
Yeah, we'll continue our NAR discussions, which is, you know, quickly becoming the stat of 1920. So
yeah, it really is. I'm not particularly great at math. So, yeah, I think we got to hire some people to – we got to get some Lehigh students, maybe some engineers over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Sweet Bread.
All right, Bucketfoot. It's been real.
We'll be here next week. We'll be really following the second half here as the pennant race and some other off-the-field stuff gets heating up as well. So, we'll see you soon on this week in 1920s baseball. You have to yell see ya at the end. That's your sign.
See ya.
All right. Take it easy.
Later.